Blog Talk Radio.
What difference if I hail?
Interesting day in world history, in American history, and San Francisco history, but we'll start with first world history and the birthdays today. In 1823, Andrew Johnson's vice president, Schuyler Colfax, was born. We had, in 1854, the Boer War, which is a war we ought to look at because South Africa is still suffering from the heritage of that war. And right now the blacks are in control, but those who have become wealthy have not helped those who were still in the shanty towns and have been abused from the time of the Afrikaners, the white Afrikaners, right through to their own black people, not Mugabe, but the people who are running the ANC, who are running the country right now. Or some people think they're running it underground. And then, of course, you have the controversial Black Archbishop Anglican, not a Catholic, Tutu, who was over here in San Francisco running his mouth about our problems here when he's got even worse problems over there. It seems that he should stay in his own church and deal with the problems over there. As we used to say, a fox smells his own hole first, or should. Today also is the birthday of Horace Bottomley. He's an interesting character in British history. He was not only a journalist, but a big swindler, and he got convicted. And he was one of the first persons or public figures to manipulate a birth certificate. Interestingly, what he did was he forged the birth certificate to slam a political opponent. He got caught at it, and he also set up this John Bull. John Bull is represents England, just like our American eagle represents the United States. It's a symbol. Anyway, he set up this John Bull World War I victory fund where people would make small payments to the fund and get a return. Well, he mismanaged and swindled. He was tried and convicted. So it's interesting. It just shows you another journalist who was corrupt. And, of course, we've seen Jake Lingle in Chicago, who worked for the Chicago Tribune, or was on their books. He didn't write much, but he was also Al Capone's operative. He got caught. And in the black and white film, 1959, film starring Robert Stack and Martin, I think it was Martin Landau, who played Jake Lingle, the corrupt journalist. When he was no longer useful, he was sitting in the Illinois Central Railroad depot in downtown Chicago in Grant Park, which was infamous because of the 1968 Democratic Convention. He got a bullet in the back of his head, and they never found the killers. But just goes to show you that there are corrupt journalists, and there have been, and we still have them today, and they're still in the media. That's why these are some of the references that I make and others made to morons in the media or media malaise. Also today is the birthday of the first king of Iraq and Syria, King Faisal. Now, if you saw the movie Lawrence of Arabia, Faisal, who was played by, I think, Alec Guinness, he wanted to set up Colonel Lawrence, who was in the closet, repressed homosexual. Great soldier, though. Great strategist. And he helped defeat the Turks and create a homeland for the Arabs. He was an Arab expert, probably the British Army's foremost expert in the whole history of that country. And, of course, we have my friend, my late friend, Brigadier Francis Ingle, who was an expert on Pakistan and India and Bengal Lancers. And we'll get into that a little later. But Faisal was manipulated by the British, and he wanted to be king, and Lawrence got pushed out and had an interesting life. I recommend that great film, Lawrence of Arabia. Also today is the birthday of Felix Yusupov. He's one of the assassins of Rasputin, the notorious dissolute monk in the last days of the Romanov Empire in 1916. Also, another terrorist was born today, George Grievous. Those of us who remember the 60s and another political archbishop, Tutu wasn't the only one. This one was Greek Orthodox, Archbishop Makarios. He became the leader, political leader. He didn't believe in separation of church and state, even on April 15th. He became the political leader of Cyprus and the Greeks, and they wanted Cyprus to join Greece. And, of course, they had a large Turkish population, and the Turks didn't want that because they felt they would be discriminated against. And Grievous was running a terrorist campaign, and the name of the campaign was Enosis. I think it's a Greek word for unification or reunification. But he was born today. And, of course, I think Makarios, the wily Greek Orthodox Archbishop, manipulated him. And also today, among the deaths, was Elizabeth Taylor. Some people refer to her as Super Bitch. But another one was born today, Lucille LeSueur, who was renamed Joan Crawford. She was born in San Antonio, Texas. And then we had the guy who worked as a consultant to the James Bond films, Colonel Joseph Russolin. He was born today. And then Wernher von Braun, the controversial rocket scientist, he was of the same period as Dr. Robert Goddard, the guy who invented, was the first man, I mentioned this before, to develop a solid fuel rocket back in the late 20s, I think, in the University of Massachusetts. And I'm going to play a rare recording of him because he designed the V1 rockets. He was a Nazi, as they all were. They were slave labor of people who worked in Peenemünde in those caves developing those wonder weapons for the Nazis, which Hitler was going to use to destroy England, and which he should have aimed those rockets. If he had aimed those rockets at the landings in Normandy, Europe might still have been controlled by the successors of Hitler. Hitler's probably dead. Some people think he isn't, but it's been nearly 60 years. He would have been 110. But anyway, they decided the Russians were closing in this part of northern Germany up there on the Baltic, and the German scientists who were doing the rockets decided that they wanted to be captured by the Americans. They didn't want to end up in a Russian slave labor camp. There was a race by the Russians, the communist Stalin's people, and the Americans and the British to get the German scientists who was going to get them. Russians also got experts in submarine development, although the Russians in World War One were also very advanced in submarine development. They also were the, giving them credit, giving the devil his due, they were also the first country, first military to develop parachutists from airplanes and military, although there's a rare motion picture of a newsreel clip of the Russian paratroopers sitting on a wing of this giant plane. They weren't coming out of the inside of the plane. They were coming off the wing. It's quite interesting. I don't know how many survived. But Wernher von Braun is very interesting, and a lot of people have been raising questions about these rocket scientists who were brought over in Operation Paperclip. And you can look at that in a variety of ways, that if Wernher von Braun and his crew of scientists and experts in that field had been captured by the Russians, he would have been developing rockets that were going to be aimed at us. So it was the devil we know and control, or the devil that they got and was going to use against us. So I guess we should look at it that way, because none of these issues are in morality are black and white. There's always shades of gray. But here's an interesting take on him, which was done in a German newsreel.
Is also proud of him. Der Spiegel magazine runs with the headline, Germans in the front line. German television also pays tribute. The name Wernher von Braun is on everyone's lips. An American satellite is orbiting the Earth, the commentator says. A triumph for the U.S. Army research team headed by former German rocket expert Wernher von Braun.
I started working for rocketry in space in 1930, and I have looked forward to this day for 28 years.
Increasingly, the media focus extends to the missile man's private life. A happy von Braun, rocket fetishist, as loving husband and perfect dad. A flying visit to Germany. In the late 50s, von Braun crosses the Atlantic several times for family reunions. But the visits home are now also PR exercises. In 1959, with the support of the U.S. Army, a movie about the Star Rocketeer is made near Munich. A tricky business for everyone concerned.
There was the man who had created those bombs. He attacked my house. I was not a friend of his. I had to, right from the start, I had to resist becoming a close friend of his, because he was charming. He could charm the pants off anyone, I think, and he was a very clever man. You knew that right away. I had tremendous arguments with him, because he maintained that he was only a scientist, that he was not a Nazi. And I said, that's nonsense. Of course you're a Nazi. You belong to the Nazi party. And why do you say you're not a Nazi? We had these kind of discussions.
Premiere in Munich. Glitz and glamour. The movie shows no trace of the discord between director and subject. Thompson doesn't present von Braun as a Nazi, more as a non-political opportunist.
So far, I've managed to steer clear of the brown shirts.
Braun bagage.
Werner, you mustn't join the party.
You think I want to?
It's
the price I have to pay if I want to continue my work.
Kurt Jürgens as Wernher von Braun, impressive but one-dimensional. Director J. Lee Thompson had his work cut out with the real von Braun and the actor playing him.
I cast Kurt Jürgens because we needed a German actor. Kurt would always turn on the charm, as indeed von Braun was a charmer. And so the film became in a way, not what I wanted, a fair balance.
An dem Tag, an dem die V-Raketen auf London fallen, ist der Krieg gewonnen. Reichsführer Himmler wird Ihnen selbst sagen, was Sie für Deutschland geleistet haben. Alle klar.
Alle klar.
Von Braun is pleased with the film, and so is the U.S. Army that sponsored it. Critics are less impressed. There's talk of whitewashing. In Far Off Huntsville, the movie does not cause much of a stir. The Army Rocket Center receives a high-ranking visitor. In 1959, President Eisenhower pays his first visit to von Braun's realm of rockets. But the old soldier keeps the Rocketeers at arm's length, and he is certainly not enamored with von Braun. The pictures are deceiving. Eisenhower is one of the few people who do not succumb to Wernher von Braun's charm. Even so, the president bore gifts. Eisenhower's first visit brings a transfer to the civilian space agency NASA. Promotion and new opportunities. Von Braun hopes for new sources of funding for his 5,000-strong team of Rocketeers in Huntsville. Playing the Russian card, he secures the backing of an increasing number of decision-makers in Washington. He emphasizes the Soviet threat.
I'm convinced that the Russian concept is very clear. They consider the control of space around the Earth very much like, shall we say, the great maritime powers considered the control of the seas in the 16th through the 18th century. And they say if we want to control this planet, we have to control the space around it.
The 12th of April, 1961, another black day for America and for Wernher von Braun. With Yuri Gagarin, the Soviets pull off another coup. The first man in space is a Russian. Sputnik was a shock. Gagarin's flight is a humiliation for the proud Americans and Wernher von Braun. Incoming President John F. Kennedy, only recently established in the White House, immediately comes under massive pressure. He needs to react.
Kennedy's response to that, you know, he was mad. He turned people and said, I want to know what we can do to beat the Russians. Mm-hmm. We got to beat those people. And Kennedy understood the psychology of this. He understood the importance.
The young president has to show the world that he can rise to the Soviet challenge. For von Braun, it's the chance of a lifetime. He sees only one way to beat the Soviets, to send a manned mission to the moon. And he pushes the idea wherever and whenever he can.
Are we supposed to wait until there's a red flag on the moon?
Finally, in May 1961, Kennedy makes a speech announcing precisely what von Braun so desperately wants and has dreamt of for so many years. America will put an astronaut on the moon by the end of the decade.
New American enterprise.
Significant in Soviet Union, the guy who was supposed to go up before Yuri Gagarin, who was the first successful Russian cosmonaut to go up in space, was a guy named Valentin Bondarenko. Excuse me. He died at the age of 24. He was in the unit an oxygen testing unit in the Soviet Union. It caught fire, and he was either burned to death or he was suffocated to death. It was pretty horrible. He would have gone up first instead of Yuri Gagarin on this date, March 23rd, 1961. Interestingly, after Yuri Gagarin successfully returned to Earth, later on, he was drinking while he was driving, and he got in a car accident and died. There have been other Russian failures in space and people dying, but we don't always hear about it. Also on deaths on this day was Peter Lorre, the great actor who played these slimy villains in with Sidney Greenstreet during the 40s. He was always involved in films which involved intrigue, manipulation, murder, espionage. Also in 1983, the first mechanical heart transplant case, Dr. Barney Clark, who was a Mormon and a dentist. He lived about, I think, a couple of months, and then he died on this day. Now, the inventor of buffalo wings, this is interesting because it has a Catholic connection to it. A guy named Dominic Bellissimo in Buffalo, New York, during March is the Lent period for the Roman Catholic Church. And in the before they changed the rules, you couldn't eat meat during Lent, but you could eat it on the weekends. Chicken was considered meat. So the story goes that Bellissimo and his wife had some guests around midnight on a Friday, and they wanted to cook up something. So she decided, well, we got these chicken wings. So she threw them in cayenne pepper and butter, and then fried them. And so this is the that's why they're called buffalo wings. There are other disputes. Calvin Trillin, the great food critic, he quotes somebody else. I think it's a black guy, but that's the origin of it. That they were invented on a Friday after midnight and during Lent, so that on early Saturday morning, Bellissimo's guest, who he also ran a restaurant, could eat meat. Culinary developments are quite strange. It's like the guy who invented the sandwich. It was the Earl of Sandwich who wanted he was playing, gambling at the table. And this was in the Middle Ages, late Middle Ages, and he wanted to be able to continue whatever he was doing. So he ordered meat with some bread, and he decided to eat it quickly. So he put the meat, or his servant put the meat between the bread, and that's how sandwiches were created. So the story goes. Also on this day, the Messiah, the great Handel's greatest oratorio, he was German. A lot of Germans went to England, like Joseph Haydn, Mozart, George Frederick Handel, and the premiere today in London. And George, I think it was the second or the third, they were Germans also, never spoke English, is interesting. And this whole house, Prince William, who has a German ancestry on his father's side, the Battenbergs became Mountbattens and Windsors. Anyway, the Hallelujah Chorus was so moving to George II that this is where the origin, where people stand up when this the Hallelujah Chorus of Handel is sung. So the king stood up, and of course, out of respect for the king, the audience had to stand up. Now, also, Handel was one of the several composers and musicians in history, conductors, studied law. Even a couple became lawyers. Peter Ilyich Tchaikovsky, George Frederick Handel studied law. Robert Schumann, another German. Igor Stravinsky, a Russian, another Russian. And I think there was one other that studied law, but decided to go into music. And other music, symphony and opera conductors studied philosophy, like Yasha Horenstein. So it's quite interesting that great musicians don't often start, a lot of them, or several of them, do not often start out in the field of music, but come to it from another field like law. And let's see, who else was born? Oh, yes, Patrick Henry made that famous statement today, give me liberty or give me death. And then Lewis and Clark reached the Pacific coast. And if you've ever been to the furthest point on the west coast, the continental west coast of the United States, Astoria, Oregon, it's really beautiful. And then the first recorded use of the word in print, okay, was on this date. It was a Boston newspaper. Also, the Otis elevator, the first one invented, was installed in a New York building at this address, 488 Broadway. I don't know if that building is still standing today. Also on this date, the streetcar was patented in Philadelphia. That's where the first streetcar was. And then the University of California, one of the great universities, you hear about it at University of California at Berkeley, It actually started in Oakland, which is next door, Oakland, California, on this date. And then this one I don't understand because I have some, I did have some Protestant relatives, Native American side of the family, living in Oklahoma. They were, I believe, Baptists. President Benjamin Harrison, who was the son of William Tippecanoe, General William Henry Harrison. Benjamin Harrison was also from Indiana. He opened the state of Oklahoma for white colonization. I didn't have time to look up all of that. And then the great opera singer, another musician, Nellie Melba, that's where you get the term Melba toast. She revealed the recipe for that today. The Dixie cup, the paper cup, was invented today. The Wright brothers patented the airplane on this day. And then this is also interesting. Mussolini, who was not a lawyer, he was a school teacher, I believe. He started the fascist party in Italy, one of the longest reigning dictators in that period of history, in 1944. And then Tennessee, the state of Tennessee, outlawed the teaching of evolution. And there's a famous movie called Inherit the Wind with Frederick March, who played the role of William Jennings Bryan, who was a anti-evolutionist, a Bible beater. And then there was Charles Darrow, the great lawyer from Chicago, who also had the Leopold and Loeb homosexual murder trial. Great lawyer Darrow was. And then Hitler was granted the Enabling Act today, which gave him the dictatorial powers to run Germany and run it into the ground. And then this is relevant today in that part of the world. The Indian Muslim Party was agitated for a Muslim homeland. So this is where it started in our time. Also, we'll get into this. It's very famous, infamous event in San Francisco. The Japanese were ordered into detention camps on this day in 1942. And then Pakistan was proclaimed on this date, 1950, an Islamic Republic. And, of course, Brigadier Ingall, late Brigadier Francis Ingall of the Bengal Lancers, was the commandant of the Pakistan Military Academy, still revered over there. And then a lot of nuclear tests were started in Nevada, in France, in Russia on this date. I don't know what it is about March 23rd. And, of course, this is interesting. On this date, 1981, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that only men, only males, could be convicted of statutory rape. It didn't apply to women. Isn't that interesting inequality, considering there are predatory women out there? Also, on this date, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that states could require parental notification for abortions involving teenage girls. Now, also, there was a clip of news earlier that more and more states are cracking down on this rampant abortion business that's going on. We'll get into that later. So we're going to end right now with our usual, and we'll be back Friday with the best of the week. Excuse me. And we're probably have a special Sunday because I can't get them any other time. Former member of the Yugoslav Army during the President Tito's time, when Yugoslavia was one country. We will probably have an interview Sunday, a special interview, an hour interview on what would Tito do if he were alive, and we had all those problems in the Balkans. As Churchill used to say, there's always trouble in those damn Balkans. So we'll end with what our politics has often been, politics and poker.
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bet.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Say, Tony, what are you going to do?
I'm in it.
So am I.
Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We're gonna pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big Ace.
Ace bet.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where do you stand?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Republican who's willing to lose.
Well, we hope we don't find one, an unqualified one. This is Peter Paul Verzola. Thank you for listening. This will remain up in the archives, and I would recommend that you listen to Patrick Butler's little treatise on Ireland, some of the things you wanted to know but didn't know where to look and were afraid to ask. This is Peter Paul Verzola. We'll be back Friday for the Hour Show at 5 o'clock. Thanks for listening.